All right, good morning. Are both sides ready to proceed? All right, very well. This is the time for oral argument in the matter 92629. Mr. Schrader, do you all wish to retain some time for rebuttal? Okay. And you can approach the podium and get started whenever you're ready. Just for the record, Justice Paragare is joining us from Carson City. He's probably on your screen.
Very good. Good morning. May it please the Court. Bradley Schrager for Judge Mercer. In this case, Ms. Candelaria does not and cannot claim that she followed the law of candidate filing when she attempted to declare for Department Z last January. In fact, it became clear below that she didn't know the law and that she was simply unaware of the regulation at issue here, NAC 293-0604. Each of Ms. Candelaria's arguments below and here today, Your Honors, is designed to explain why she shouldn't have to follow the law and why she cannot be held account now for not having followed the law. But let's be very clear. Her attacks on the regulation itself are not principled objections to a filing process she finds unfair. They are birdshot arguments in reaction to her discovery, belatedly, of what the law required and what procedures she failed to follow. Ms. Candelaria broke the cardinal rule, which has been laid down in election cases by this court, in LVCVA, and most recently in the Green Party case. No matter what the situation, whether you're trying to get a ballot measure qualified, if you're trying as a party to get ballot access, or if you're a candidate trying to file a declaration, the responsibility is entirely yours to know the law, review the law, and ensure that proper procedures are followed so that you can gain the thing you are after. But Ms. Candelaria did have to follow the law here, because per statute and the court's jurisprudence, in Nevada, regulations have the force of law. And NAC 293-0604 lays out the details of the candidate filing process. Just as elsewhere, NAC 293 lays out what to do with duplicate voter registrations, what to do with surrendered ballots. It even sets which of your seats are up for election in which cycle. That's exactly what administrative regulations are meant to do. NAC 293-0604 was proposed by the Secretary of State. It went through public comment. It gained legislative approval as meeting the legislative intent and the authority vested in the agency, and it has been followed by thousands of potential candidates since its promulgation.
This it was court, promulgated in 2023, correct?
That's correct.
And prior to 2023, had she pursued the procedure she did here, were the facts all exactly the same, the filing would have been okay or not?
With no regulation, would it have been okay? It's unclear. Probably the Secretary of State would have issued an interpretation of the statute at that point. So it's hard to say. I don't think so, but it's hard to say. Right? Because there are things that are about her filing process that are out of order anyway. Right?
Counsel, are we exalting form over substance? Would you say she substantially complied with the regulation?
No. No, and this is a very good place to start. Number one, I think it's very hard to substantially comply by accident. But even if you could, this court's jurisprudence regarding substantial compliance has always been very, very clear. There must be compliance for there to be substantial compliance. Every element of the thing you have to comply with, you must demonstrate an attempt to comply with. You also cannot create the conditions of your noncompliance, which is what happened here. This is the lesson of LVCVA. It's also the lesson of the Green Party case, which I understand there was a dissent in the Green Party case, which I think was on behalf of the Chief Justice and Justice Pickering. But even under that standard, those concerns, I don't think we get there here, right? Because very clearly...
circling back, though, to my question, could you tell me what is the authority in effect, if it's correct that prior to 2023 she could have followed this process and been within the letter of the statute? What in the statute authorized the promulgation of a regulation to constrict the requirements for valid filing under Chapter 293? Because there's some places where the legislature specifically empowers the adoption of a regulation or even directs its promulgation. Yes. And I don't see that here. You're a deeper student than I of these statutes.
But yeah. Well, let's not presume that that's a necessary condition of the promulgation of a regulation, right? The legislature has afforded the Secretary of State broad latitude to enact regulations. In fact, it's in two different places. 293.124, which says that the Secretary shall adopt such regulations as are necessary to carry out, essentially, NRS Chapter 293. Right?
So which statute's that?
That's 293.124. That's the broad grant,
yeah.
Right? And if you look at 293.247, it speaks more specifically. And you're exactly right. In Section 2, Subsection 3, there are a list of specific items that the legislature wants the Secretary of State to cover in his or her regulations. Absolutely true. But if you look at Subsection 3, sub J, after all the other things, the disposition of election returns, the form and placement of instructions to voters, because the legislature understands there are many things that it's not within its expertise on an everyday basis to run the machinery of complex elections. But Subsection J says, and such other matters as determined necessary by the Secretary of State. That's an admission, essentially, that we don't know everything. You are in touch with the clerks. You are in charge of the machinery. You will know what is necessary to run a
election. Is it a 6,000-foot
view? Well, I mean, it's the sort of first one that you can do any regulation to do that which you are empowered to do. The next isn't quite 30,000, is it? It's, if there are other things we haven't mentioned that you think you need to do, you should do them. And that, in essence, justifies 293.0604 in itself. The Secretary of State determined that under the circumstances of elections across the state, this particular regulation was necessary for a uniform... And look, the section we're talking about, really, of 0604 has to do with remote technology, right? Even though there are three sections to 0604, three options to how to file. 293.177 says, okay, you need to file, you need to do it in this particular way, it needs to be in this particular format, and it needs to be done by this particular time on this particular day. The Secretary determined that, you know what, to make it uniform for everyone, so that everyone understands, and in view of the pandemic situation that we just climbed out of, right, there are ways of filing we want to make available to everyone. They're not burdensome, right? The first one is you can mail it all in if it's notarized. And the sort of notarization part is important. Somebody's watched you sign it and sworn to it. Someone invested with power by the state has watched you do that thing, and you then hand it over through the mails. It must arrive before the end of the filing deadline, and the fee is there with it.
And you would say the difference between the mailed version and the emailed version is that the mailed version presumably is an original, so you can look at the original notary stamp, or what?
That is certainly true in that instance, yes. The mail version that's the only part of 0604 that says this must be notarized, because it wants to be sure someone's seen you do this thing, seen you sign this, seen you fill this out, put it in, for election security and for other reasons, right? So...
Mr. Schrager, would an electronic notary be sufficient to satisfy that requirement?
That's a different question. Obviously, that would be if you're mainly. I'm not as conversant in like what that is, but if that notarization serves for every other type of notarization, that could potentially work. But the legislature and the Secretary of State knows how to differentiate between when mailing is sufficient and when email will be sufficient. And very clearly here, the Secretary used U.S. mail, right? That's the defined term in Chapter 293. So clearly expressed, that's the format we want to see.
Sorry, within that chapter, it specifically defines that mail means U.S.
That's
mail.
Correct. That's in the definitional section in NRS 293, specifically sent through the U.S. mails.
But if the election program supervisor is a informing the candidate on how to submit it and then confirms that email is sufficient, is there an estoppel argument that could be made?
No. And in fact, this is the kind of thing that came up in the LVCVA case, also came up in the Green Party case. They told me it was okay. They put up on their website the form that I was supposed to use. They put in their, meaning the SOS, they put in their guide, I could do it this way. I'm not sure that this, you know, that this is any different. There's nothing that that officer can do to accept an unlawful filing that will make it lawful. So no, there's not an estoppel. Once again, the responsibility and all of 0604, and in fact all of 293, 177, puts this responsibility on the individual candidate, not on, in the last 10 minutes, right before filing, the individual officer, who is not empowered, by the way, to make a regulation, make an interpretation, or do anything outside. And in fact, tells people, tells every candidate in its guidelines and in the regulation, we're not responsible for this. If you make an error, it's on you. If you discover an error and come back before the end of filing, we'll fix it with you. But we're not going to tell you about it. We don't give legal advice. It's not on us. I don't see how in this situation that would change from this court's long jurisprudence on that issue.
Mr. Schrager, I just want to ask you a little different question before we run out of time. And that is focusing on NRS 293.182. I want to understand why that even applies here. In other words, why this particular challenge is arguing that the candidate fails to meet any qualification required for the office.
Yeah, they make much of that, this sort of qualification argument. What I think they're trying to claim, and what your question goes to, Justice Kadish, is qualification, right?
Yes.
And clearly the threshold qualification for what 182 and the section 182 resides in is the qualification to run for the office, right? It is not a constitutional qualification. This is not, you know, you don't find this in the Quo Warranto chapter of the NRS. You find it here. It's tied to the filing of your declaration. All of its deadlines flow through the filing of the declaration for candidacy. And this court has said previously, 293.182 exists to provide a prompt resolution of issues regarding access to the ballot. That's what it's there for. And this is a threshold qualification. It doesn't matter how old you are if you don't file a declaration of candidacy.
But where 293.182 says qualifications required for the office,
yeah,
and then 3.060 defines the qualifications, it's entitled qualifications for a district court judge,
yeah,
we're speaking to the things, the minimum qualities we want somebody to have to be able to take on the position of a judge. Their age, their attorney licensing, how long they've been practicing, they're a resident, they've never been kicked out of office, that type of stuff. How does this, a procedural filing, have anything to do with your ability to do the job of a judge, your qualifications that are required to be a judge?
It has to do with your qualifications to run for the office of judge. That's the distinction. NRS 293.182 resides in a particular place for a particular reason within the code. It doesn't reside in NRS Chapter 3. It resides here.
I have one question. They repeatedly ascribe to you a concession that she is qualified. You're now saying you don't make that concession because you would treat qualification as equating with compliance with the regulatory requirements for filing?
We're talking about different sets of qualifications.
Right, if but the word qualification is in 293.182, yeah, sub 1. That word, does that word qualification, according to you, mean a timely filing per the letter of the regulation?
Per the letter of the regulation, yes, because if someone discovered that a sitting district court judge failed in the constitutional qualifications, they could file a quo warranto action anytime they wanted to. In this particular instance, where what a 182 challenge is meant to do is to provide an opportunity in a very short window, right, to discover those things which could keep someone off of the ballot. Now, it is not a qualification constitutionally to be a district court judge.
Is it a qualification pursuant to the laws of this state in your position in this court?
To run for the office of judge, absolutely.
Okay.
If you can't do that, if you can't file properly, if you can't be truthful on your candidate filing, if you haven't lived in your district 30 days before the close of filing,
right,
those
the timely filing of this document, like let's say they sent it UPS instead of by regular mail, you would say they didn't comply with the regulation and the letter of the regulation. Would you say that's a failure of qualification under 182 sub 1?
Well, I mean, in that instance, we'd be talking about if everything else being fine, we'd be talking, if it arrived on time, we'd be talking about a substantial compliance. As a matter of qualification, it could be questioned, at least. That doesn't mean it would be successful, but it could be questioned. But I want to say this about these procedural issues, because I think this is very important. They are essentially sideshows to the merits. There are many ways to challenge the eligibility and the propriety of someone's filing and their candidacy. And if this court were to say, yeah, you know, you did it wrong, I'm an election lawyer, there's going to be a merits decision regarding the validity of this filing one way or the other. Right? So, you know, it seems to me that it would be form over substance to say that the inability or the invalidity of your attempt to get on the ballot means you can't be challenged for the statute that permits you to challenge somebody to get on the ballot. The reason why it's fast is for the clerks. It's to ensure that the ballot is accurate and that filing is closed in a sort of quick time, right?
What's the deadline for printing the ballots that you understand?
It's in a filing yesterday, the county said it was August 21st.
Thanks.
So I'm going to reserve the rest of my time if that's okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Polsenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Dan Polsenberg for Amber Candelaria.
Are you, since you have a cross?
Yes, I do, and I'll save three.
Pardon?
I will save 3 minutes. Your new microphones are quite interesting. So the issues in this case come in three waves. There's the substantive and procedural issues. In other words, did the filing officer properly accept this filing? Then we have, I don't want to call it the merits, but the more substantive issues, which are the procedural issue is, did they file the correct proceeding to get here? The substantive issue is, did the filing officer properly accept? And the third issue is my cross appeal, should Amber Candelaria have fees? I'm going to misuse my 2 minutes by addressing the first wave first. I know you focused on the substance of it, but I do think the procedure is correct. Mr. Schrager tells us that he is an election lawyer and this is form over substance. But if you're going to challenge a technical deficiency in a filing for a declaration of candidacy, you better be technically correct in how you do it. And they used the wrong procedure. Judge Mercer says, well, form over substance, we could have filed a quo warranto, mandamus, declaratory relief action, but they didn't file anything. Instead, they put in a contest with the Registrar of Voters, who turned it over to the district attorney. The district attorney filed it. This court knows I'm usually pretty flexible on jurisdiction. And I can see, in fact, Anona and I have a pro bono case, where we're saying you can forgive a late notice of appeal because it's not statutory. This is a statutory procedure. They had to follow the statute. If they had brought a quo warranto or a mandamus, although I would think it would be prohibition, or a declaratory relief action, that would have been appropriate. And then the DA's office would be in defending the Registrar of Voters instead of disqualifying the DA's lawyer and forcing Amber to get her own lawyer, as deficient as he may be in election law. So this is just inappropriate because it didn't go to qualifications. The qualifications are in NRS Chapter 3. They're saying, well, the qualification to hold office is you have to file. Another qualification to hold office is you have to be elected. That would be like they're coming in and challenging qualifications of somebody to be on the ballot because they haven't been elected yet. The qualifications are clearly set out And they rely a great deal on the 2017 amendment. But if you look at the 2017 legislative history, the Secretary of State made clear that AB 21 was the candidate residency declaration bill. What they were looking for in making the changes to the declaration and the procedures was looking at residency within a district. Now, these are candidates for district court, and this court has said that there isn't a district residency requirement, so none of this even matters. It's not like I have to rely on them conceding that Ms. Candelaria lives in Clark County. She can simply live in the state.
But why wouldn't we interpret the word qualification expansively to get the show on the road and get the matter resolved?
Why would you? Well, you could skip that issue and go to the merits.
Right, no, but I mean, as an interpretive legal matter, we're interpreting whether or not your argument is legally correct that he filed the wrong stat, he filed under the wrong procedure.
You could do that.
Okay.
I do think it's possible to just decide this on the procedural issue. And I see that, and I raised ROCA.
But if we interpret qualification expansively, then the procedural argument would be aside and we would go on to the merits, correct?
But I think my best argument is that this procedure that the legislature has implemented to keep from filing a lawsuit doesn't apply to anything other than qualifications like age, residency. And I think the legislative history is clear on that. So we'll go to the merits. There are a number of reasons why the Registrar of Voters properly accepted this. And they keep arguing that there wasn't a delegation of duty to the Registrar of Voters. It was only to the Secretary of State. They're coming in here and arguing the Secretary of State can make regulations about anything he wants to make them about, and is the only one capable of interpreting the regulations. Let me do those backwards. So an agency required to implement or administer a statute or procedure is entitled to deference. The Registrar of Voters and the county clerks in our 17 counties are the ones who implement and administer most of the filing.
Mr. Polsenberg, is it your position that Ms. Candelaria complied with any of the three options under 293.0604?
Yes, she complied with number three, which was the allowance of filing by remote means.
Virtually using a remote technology system. You're saying she actually did that?
Yes, she absolutely did that. She talked to the office, and they said they would accept an email verified.
I understand that she says that, and she sent an email, and that's how the document got to the office.
Yes.
But my question is, you're arguing that meets the requirement of the regulation to file virtually using a remote technology system.
Yes, under Section 1. It clearly does. She filed virtually using a remote technology and was allowed to. In that provision, it says if allowed by the filing officer, she was allowed to by the filing officer.
Okay. And Sub 2 says that if the filing officer provides the option to file virtually using a remote technology system, the candidate must have paper copies, pay the filing fee before the virtual meeting, that the filing documents must be held up to the camera, lays out requirements using the word must repeatedly. Did she comply with those?
I don't think those apply here.
Okay.
Because those are assuming you're doing some type of virtual meeting. Subsection 1.
How you comply with...
I think it's saying if you're having a virtual meeting, how to comply with a virtual meeting. Nothing in Section 1 says you have to have a virtual meeting. It allows the Registrar of Voters to have alternate means. And the Registrar of Voters in Clark County, now I get it, some of the other counties may not be able to do virtual means.
Right.
But she complied with Section 1 by filing by remote means. I don't think the Secretary of State, I know the Secretary of State doesn't like remote filing. But the Secretary...
Well, that's not the question. The question is, did this comply with the regulation?
Well, each filing officer is allowed to decide what remote means they can use.
Where does it say that?
In subsection 1, where it talks about the filing officer may accept filings by remote means.
Right. And then it says, if they do provide that option, then A through C, mandatory, shall, must.
I don't think, first of all, I don't think those apply. I think they only apply to how the Secretary of State's office does it if they do a remote meeting. They keep talking about remote meeting. Subsection 1 doesn't say you have to have a remote meeting. The Registrar of Voters could have.
But if Subsection 2 does, don't we have to read them together? They're part of the same regulation.
No, I think there are constitutional problems with Subsection 2. I think the Registrar of Voters was appropriate in saying, I don't need to comply with that. I will comply in the way that I am. I think that is substantial compliance. I also think it's estoppel. If the Registrar of Voters says, remember, the day before the filing, Amber Candelaria looked at the handout for candidates. It says, if you can't file in person, call 702-455-2249.
Okay.
She did. The Registrar of Voters said the appropriate way to do this is to email it to us. So I think there's an estoppel issue. I think
argue estoppel?
We on page 5 we said that she relied on what the Registrar of Voters did. Yes.
Okay.
So, and I think that's also substantial compliance.
So, Mr. Poulsenberg, it only says filing officer in subsection 2. So what about that tells us that this really only applies to the Secretary of State?
In subsection 2? I'm talking about filing officer in subsection 1, where the filing officer has the choice of doing remote means.
Right, but you said subsection 2...
Oh, it doesn't say only the Secretary.
It doesn't. It uses the same term, right? Filing officer, as is used in subsection 1. So what do we do with that?
Here's what I'm saying is they're talking about the granular details. I think it is inappropriate for the Secretary of State to establish these kind of granular details when the delegation in subsection 1 has been to any filing officer to do remote means. So
subsection 2 is not permissible because subsection 1 gave away the authority? Is that your argument?
That is my argument. I also think it's an unconstitutional restriction on the right to run for office. Now, I have, so Justice Paragiri in a case called Amber Candelaria and Justice Rose in the Nevada judge's case talked about how a restriction on the right to run for office has to meet minimum standards. I got 2 votes in Candelaria for strict scrutiny, but those 2 aren't here, so I'm going to stick with minimum standards.
But these are like reasonable, non-discriminatory requirements that all candidates have to apply equally, right? So it's not unduly burdensome. It's just the procedure by which you have to file.
Well, that's Candelaria, which would say, well, different people fall into different classes. I think Nevada judges would talk about restrictions on anybody running for office. So under the U.S. Supreme Court case in Anderson, you have to see what the injury is and if the restrictions by the government agency are justified on that injury. The injury here is there is a right to file remotely, Is there a rational basis to say, but if you do file remotely, you have to have a camera?
Where is there a right to file remotely? Sorry, I missed
that. In subsection 1.
Subsection 1 gives a right to file remotely.
It says
you can file virtually using a remote technology system if authorized by the appropriate filing officer.
And this filing officer did authorize
it. So because they authorized it, there's now a right to file remotely using a system other than the one meeting the minimum requirements of sub 2.
Well, they would have to justify the restrictions that they put on that allowance, where the Registrar of Voters is saying, yes, you can file this way. So look at the restrictions. You have to be on camera. There's no reason you have to be on camera if you are sending in a notarized document. There is no reason that you would have to pay before the meeting instead of during the meeting. There's no reason you would have to have an on-camera meeting when there are multiple phone calls here. I think there's substantial compliance with subsection 2.
How does she personally know the filing officer? How does the filing officer know that's, in fact, Ms. Candelaria on the phone, even?
It's notarized. She accepts the notarized, just as if it had been mailed.
But that didn't come over the phone call. That came by email, right?
Right. And there were phone calls. There's no reason to have the meeting at the same time as the signing if you have it notarized.
Well, there's no reason to have the meeting at all if you can mail it in by the deadline. But anyway, okay.
Your brief is a bit unclear to me whether or not you are asserting that the regulation itself impermissibly restricts the ways in which filing can be accomplished, and if so, what the legal basis for that argument is, or if, on the other hand, you're arguing that the regulation is valid, but it imbues the filing officer with a wide measure of discretion as to what constitutes compliance with remote filing. Which is it, or is it both?
It's both. So the second part is my argument on subsection 1, that it gives the filing officer, the Registrar of Voters, the ability to accept remote means that satisfy her.
Do they need that? In other words, before 2023, there was no restriction anywhere in the statute
right.
on the means by which you accomplish filing.
Right.
Do you think that the regulation, are you contending that it impermissibly constricted that wide authorization ostensibly provided by the statute?
Yes. I have a lot of arguments. Yes, I am arguing that.
On what theory are you arguing that?
My backup argument, I think that's what the district court held, not on a constitutional basis, but that 293.177 sets out a basis, just says you can have filing, and that subsection 1 says may by remote means. And so...
So you're again reverting to the regulation.
I think my easier argument is that I'm okay under Part 1 of the regulation. I think my broader argument is the statute doesn't put this kind of restriction in there. There's no direct authorization for the Secretary of State to do restrictions on filings of declaration of candidacy. And, you know, the 2017 amendment, again, that they rely on, the legislature expressly said, the regulation expressly said you can do regulations as to what kind of identification is appropriate to show residency. They don't have the wholesale ability to do granular details about anything the Secretary of State wants.
That issue raised in the trial court. Oh, I'm so sorry.
What?
The issue of the Secretary of State's lack of authority.
Yeah, I even went into a Chevron deference argument in the district court, which I know doesn't work too well in this court.
May I ask a question, Chief?
Or in SCOTUS.
I think it's an open question.
Well, I was making an argument, too, about Bright overruling Chevron deference.
Fine. You're violating everything I tell young attorneys about when you run out of time, ask for permission to keep talking.
I think it was addressing Justice Cases.
I have a follow-up question that the Chief has given me permission to ask, and it's limited to the regulation, and in particular 1C permits a filing of declaration virtually using a remote technology system, and then if authorized, which you're leaning on the if authorized. But in subparagraph 2, you want to say that these requirements in 2 aren't really important, but they too use the phrase using file declaration of candidacy virtually using a remote technology system. So they are defining what virtually using a remote technology system means in 1C by any normal statutory type interpretation rule. So how do you get to this more expanded version that email's fine, you don't need any camera, no contact?
So may I answer? So I do think that there's a substantial compliance issue here. There's no reason.
But
there's no reason for my argument, both constitutional and equitable and legal, is these granular details make no sense. There's no reason to impose them.
Okay, thank you.
So you substantially complied with those requirements that make no sense?
I substantially complied with part one. We were not asked, may I answer? My laptop has a camera. My phone has a camera. There was a camera available. There's no reason why, if the registrar voter says in her mind, and I think it's legitimate that they use this way, okay, I'm not going to make Amber turn on her camera and hold up the piece of paper because I have it now, and I'm talking to her, and it's notarized.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
All right, we chewed through questions into everybody's on both sides rebuttal time, much more so with Mr. Polzenberg. So I'm going to add 3 minutes to Mr. Schrager's arguments and 2 minutes for the rebuttal on the cross appeal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Just one word on the procedural issue before we dive back into the merits, which is everybody wants the procedural requirements that apply to their opponent to be read strictly and enforced as such. Everybody wants the procedural requirements of pointed in their direction to be rather gauzy, right? What we really want, in the end, is a merits decision. We know what happened here. The decision that's necessary is it a valid file, right? Now, Justice Kirkland, you asked, okay, are you arguing for the invalidity of the regulation? Are you arguing that she complied with it? He's arguing all of it. And this is what happens when you sort of swing wildly at all the pitches. Just fine. He has a perfect right to do that. But if he's going to, you know, normally, we have a statutory process for how you try to invalidate a regulation. It's very, very clear. And if that were part of the issue here, I wouldn't have to come up with the reasons as to why the camera makes sense or the fee paying beforehand makes sense. It does, and I will do that. But the Secretary of State would be sitting at this table with me explaining the regulation. That's how we go about challenging regulations. We sort of don't do them offhandedly as an offshoot of a case like this. So I'm not even sure how much I need to defend the regulation. The camera's there because you're trying to make the virtual meeting as much like the other two as you can, right? That's why I told you, notarized filing document in the mailing would be important. Here's why it's important. Somebody with state power saw you sign it. If you do it in person, somebody with state power was there, saw you sign it. That's what the camera's there for, to do that thing.
Why isn't sending it by email equivalent in all material ways to mailing in the notarized copy?
Well, number one, outside the language of the statute, right?
Yes.
Number two, me watching you do it and it suddenly appearing in my email are two very different things.
Sorry, but I mean, you can send it apparently by U.S. mail and then the filing officer wouldn't necessarily have seen the filer either in that circumstance.
No, but the notary would have. So it's that's the importance of the notarization of the document.
But her emailed version was notarized,
yes,
correct?
That's right.
Okay, so why isn't that equivalent?
Well, I mean, as we said, both the legislature and the Secretary of State will tell you when you can do one and when you can do the other. Now, if that was the only issue here and we were arguing substantial compliance, we'd be in a different, I would still argue, was outside of the regulation, but that's not the only thing that falls short of substantial compliance here. There are a number of them. The fee, for example. What's the difference when the fee comes in? Well, when you mail it, it's in the packet. We have your entire file. At the desk, when you do it in person, you're handing them that material. They have it. This other way, what's the difference if it's before the meeting, if it's after the meeting? Well, the thing is, if I accept the filing, and 2 weeks later, you send me the fee and say, well, you accepted it, this should be fine. It's not fine. The reason why we do this is to make these things as like to the other as we possibly can.
And also to avoid favoritism by staff.
That's
in
exactly
terms of
right.
accepting and waiving requirements.
Yep. Yeah. Which is why at the desk is not the place to exercise discretion you don't have to deviate from the law. And I haven't even gotten to the district courts. May I finish my point? There's not a lot of talk today about the permissiveness of the word may, which was the heart of the district court's decision. I don't think there's a lot of confidence in that. I don't think there's a lot of confidence in the argument that there's a truncation, that you can slice off subsection 2 of the regulation if you're going to credit the regulation at all. If there is a procedural issue here, I would urge this court to resolve it promptly, because everyone understands that there's a merits issue regarding the validity of this filing, and it should and must be resolved prior to the election. Now, I've had cases where candidates have been rendered ineligible the night before the election, right? There is time to do that, and there are things you can do, but we can't do a writ of prohibition now. There's nothing to prohibit. Well, you can prohibit the printing of the ballot. Now it would be essentially a declaratory relief action. It's perfectly fine. It's just going to extend the litigation on the same facts and in the same way that we know our issue here, and it would come back to this court, and you'd have to act in a hurried fashion anyway. So thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So let me address my procedural jurisdictional issue that they ended with. I think if they were to file something, let's just stick to what it is. The only thing that's before you is their attempt to come under a statutory scheme that is designed for another issue. Last month in Roca, either all of you or most of you decided that if there is a statutory procedure, there was judicial review. Do you have to name everybody? Does that make sense? Well, it's the legislature. We don't know if they make sense. But they required it, and that relied on Whitlock, where not all of you agreed. But the court here has said if there's a statutory procedure, you have to follow the statutory procedure. They come in and say, well, we could have filed prohibition, but they didn't. They say that this is not the correct way to invalidate me being a respondent in a case, a regulation. I'm not trying to invalidate the regulation. I am just saying we can read it under these circumstances that the Registrar of Voters appropriately accepted the declaration of candidacy. Substantial compliance, equitable estoppel.
But what about if you credit the regulation, it seems to me you're according a wide measure of discretion and reading that into this regulation that would allow playing favorites between two different similarly or identically situated candidates. Is that a good thing that we should be encouraging?
There's none of that here.
I understand.
But that's important to what kind of procedure. You know, I complained in my briefing here and in the district court. I got no discovery. Everybody else?
I'm talking about how we interpret the statute and the filing requirements that it imposes. If we repose in the filing officer the measure of discretion that you think is appropriate, then where are we with two different candidates being treated who have identical facts, but one was better liked by the filing officer than the other.
My understanding and the inference I'm entitled to because I didn't get any discovery is this is how the Registrar of Voters handles remote filing. And I think it's appropriate. I think the restrictions by the Secretary of State are stupid, but I don't need to argue that. I can just say this was fine accepting what was there. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Great briefing, great argument today. I appreciate your time very much. The matter is going to stand submitted to the court, and the court's going to be in recess until our next call. Thank you.